We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/lawless. Just go to Indeed.com/lawless right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/lawless. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you take VAR away, it doesn't take technology away. So those of us on the television, we're going to say, look, you guys are morons. You missed this. This is an absolute disgrace that you missed this. Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lalas, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast, where we look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue-colored glasses. This show will be talking more messy magic. Is VAR ruining the game again? Right back, Musa. Klopp going out with a whimper. World Cup home field advantage. Producer Sean's Italian adventure. Jesse Marsh to Korea? Question mark. Welcome to Necaxa, and so much more. But first, joining me as always, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, David Mossy, a soccer savant and a Fox soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. Mossy, how are you doing on this Monday, April 29th in the year 2024?
I'm doing well. A pretty calm morning at the State of the Union pod. When I arrived in the studio, I didn't have a portly fella run towards me and yell, Mossy!
Right. No fist pumps or anything like that. But we were in good hands, as we mentioned last show. You want to explain what's happening here?
Sean Sullivan is in Italy for his honeymoon, and young Kyla Morris has stepped in. Today is her first show flying solo.
It's gone off without a hitch so far. I don't want to jinx it. We got a long way to go here, but it's wonderful. And as we mentioned in previous shows, we got wonderful men and women behind the scenes, including Kyla and so many others that are completely capable of doing some stuff. You watch anything, my friend?
Yes, I have finished Shogun. Absolutely yes. Phenomenal. Two thumbs up.
Really? Two thumbs up, 100% rating from Mossy over there. I had mentioned that my wife blazed through that, and she thought it was really, really good, too. So, I will check it. I'm not going to check it. I don't think I'm going to watch it. It doesn't hold any real appeal to me other than you like it, which makes it a possibility that I may watch it. But I saw that it was coming around, and I saw it in the rotation there, and it never really appealed to me. But you think it's really, really good.
I do, yes. And it is a cultural phenomenon. I was sitting outside of a coffee shop this weekend on the phone with a buddy of mine recommending it to him, and the person sitting next to me started nodding and
gave you the
thumbs up as if to say, yeah, I agree. I loved it too.
Wow. All right. Well, you and my wife love it. So I might give it a shot here, especially in those moments. I know we've all been there where we're scrolling through and trying to find something. We feel like we've hit the bottom of the barrel. And, you know, maybe that's my bottom of the barrel type of thing, is to throw on the Shogun. Let's see. I went back in time, watched a movie that came out in 1984, The Killing Fields, about the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia and the genocide that killed like a million to 2 million Cambodians, around 25% of the Cambodian population, killing and torture and horrible medical experimentation, indoctrination, and the use of children in a lot of this kind of stuff. It actually was nominated for Best Picture for 1984, lost to Amadeus, another wonderful movie there. And actually, they won Best Supporting Actor for Hang S. Noor, who had never acted before in a film or in theater, but he ended up winning the Academy Award. So it's really good. Sam Waterston's in it. John Malkovich is in it. And I had seen it a long, long time ago. And it's pretty horrific and deep, but really well done. Really, really interesting use of music, and really different use of music and the way that it's shot. It's got a 70s type of feel, but obviously it's an 80s type of movie. So all of the accolades that it got at the time and has continued in terms of telling this horrible story, I think are well worth it if you haven't seen it. Or if you've seen it, it's worth a rewatch. Anything else, Mossy? Should we light this candle?
Let's do it.
All right, where should we go to first?
We begin in Italy, where this past weekend, Juventus and AC Milan played to a 0-0 draw. Three Americans started, Timmy Weah for Juventus, Pulisic and Musa for AC Milan, and then Weston McKennie came on for Timmy Weah in the second half. We know when it comes to Americans in Serie A, you are like the equivalent of Dr. Dre is to West Coast hip-hop, the grandfather of it all. So it must fill you with enormous pride to see four Americans involved in a match of this stature. It's also worth noting, in light of Serginho Dest's injury, Yunus Musa started this match at right back and acquitted himself well, while Timmy Weah started at right wing back.
So Dre would be like an OG type of guy?
OG,
well,
yes.
I appreciate that's wonderful praise there. Yeah, so and there will be those that will argue that post my couple of years there, it was scorched earth for a long time. But we've gotten to a place now where I think Italy values American players. Italy values them for what they do on the field, obviously what they do from a marketing perspective, and the more the better, because I think it's a great league for Americans, and we've had fun watching these here. The actual game didn't quite live up to the hype. But it brought us some interesting things, including, as you mentioned, you know Musa over there on that right-hand side. And as we go through this summer, we've talked a lot about Serginho Dest not being there and what is going to happen, and really nobody that has stepped up in that right-back position. And so there could be, you know, a situation where Greg Berhalter does, or I guess has to get creative in the things that he has done. And this might be something, especially with Musa, at least in the last couple of windows, not really showing the progress in midfield that I think a lot of us expected. And this isn't throwing him out. Absolutely not. Still, I think, a very, very good player. But who knows? Maybe he finds a way into this 11 by showing up there on the right side. Again, no change in terms of the hierarchy of seasons, right? You're putting Pulisic at one and then Weston McKennie at second?
Correct. Okay. I do want to address something from our last pod.
Okay.
I mentioned that both Stefano Pioli and Max Allegri are likely to be gone at the end of the season. And I said that Pioli leaving was bad news for Pulisic because he was going to have to prove himself all over again to a new manager. All I meant is that he might have to re-earn his starting job. But I phrased it in such a way, and you took it to a place where we started talking about him leaving this summer. Some commenters on social media were taken aback by that. I do want to make it clear, given the season he's had, no matter who they bring in as manager, I fully expect Christian Pulisic to be at AC Milan next season.
Well, I do think that we couched it in the general evergreen reality of coaches that come in, managers that come in, and that have their... I mean, there could be somebody that comes in and says, I don't like Christian Pulisic for what I'm about to do. And while he may be good, this isn't working. So I think that's what we were talking about. To your point, I think that those would be few and far between, but they are certainly the possibility of somebody coming in. But also to your point, if and when that person comes in, you will have to reprove yourself to someone going forward. And you know, Christian Pulisic's a big boy. He'll figure out how to do that. And if he has to go someplace else, he's fine. But did you get some pushback or something? Is this why you're cleaning this up?
Yeah, a couple of people were shocked. Are you guys suggesting that they would unload Christian Pulisic this summer after the season he's had? And no, I'm not saying that.
So he's not going anywhere?
Not going anywhere.
At all? No matter who comes in?
I'd be very surprised. 99% sure he'll be at AC Milan next season.
Okay, good. But he still has to earn his spot on the field again. And, you know, Janet Jackson, what have you done for me lately, right?
Correct.
Okay. Should we go to the EPL?
Well, we have one more Serie A game.
Oh, that's right.
Mention,
yes,
remember?
Right. Let's not bury the lead here.
Yes. Bologna and Udinese played to a 1-1 draw. And we had a star-studded crowd, our own Sean Sullivan in attendance for this one. And he did send us a picture from himself and his lovely wife, Amanda, attending this match.
So for you, for those that listen and watch over the years, you know how much we value Sean and how much we talk about him. And he's a wonderful personality and character. And he is tried and true, die-hard, bleeds the game of soccer and bleeds the game of American soccer, and one of the most positive people that you will ever run into. And so we were getting texts throughout their travels over and then to the game and getting ready and pre-gaming and all that kind of stuff. And he texts sometimes with information and sometimes it's just a a text version of his woohoo or hello or I'm so excited about this, and you could just feel his excitement and his gratitude of being in this situation to see his team. And look, anybody traveling over there is gonna have a fun time, but I guarantee that he's having a wonderful time watching the soccer, obviously watching his team, eating, and just having a wonderful vacation. And so, yeah, we got pictures of what was going on, and it looks like he's having a blast over there in Italy, and we hope that that continues.
You know, the Knicks are playing the Sixers right now in a playoff series,
yes.
And at the Knicks home games at MSG, there are all these celebrities sitting in the first row, everybody from Ben Stiller to Chris Rock to Steve Shrippa, and some of these Sixers players have taken shots at the Knicks for that, saying they have a fake crowd, and these guys, Ben Stiller and company, have actually taken shots back at the Sixers players. It's turned into a funny little back and forth. But, you know, I wonder if any Udinese players will come out this week and say, well, you had Sean Sullivan in attendance, so, you know, you didn't really have your true fans out there.
Well, but Sean Sullivan, unlike Ben Stiller, evidently, he doesn't need that type of praise. He doesn't need to be elevated, or in this case, not elevated, but put on the front row in order to get all that adulation and attention that these narcissistic shells of human beings that are actors need. And so he's okay sitting in the cuva or sitting, you know, up in the tribune or whatever, but he doesn't need to be the focus of attention that these little babies need to be by sitting in the front row.
Fair enough. We go to England next to check in on the title race there. And after the events of the last few days, I would say Liverpool are off the case. On Wednesday, after we finished taping, they suffered a 2-0 defeat away to Everton in the Merseyside derby. And then this past weekend, 2-2 away to West Ham. Jared Bowen scored late in the first half. Then Andy Robertson and an own goal turned things around for Liverpool in the second half before Antonio equalized late. Liverpool with just one win in their last five Premier League games. And to add insult to injury, Mo Salah did not start this match when Klopp brought him on in the second half. Klopp and Salah got into an argument on the touchline, so they're dealing with that drama as well.
So with all of the information and technology and the intimacy that technology has brought us in the game, we still haven't figured out exactly what they were yelling about when it comes to Salah and Klopp. We'll try to get that sorted out, and at some point maybe it'll come out. After the game, Mo Salah was, I guess, very diplomatic but very prickly about what had happened and said, I don't want to talk, or if I do, there will be fire and all that. Mossy, listen, I think we've said multiple times, and this bears repeating, nothing is going to tarnish the image of Klopp. But if you look at just this season and this year, this has to be considered a failure. Yes or no?
Disappointing end to the season for sure.
Well, I mean, it's all relative in what he has done and what is expected of this team, of anybody that's coaching this team. This is going out with an absolute whimper and not something that you expect. And, you know, you're not going to be able to win every single game. But this is not just, you know, ending on a sour note. This is bad for Liverpool.
Yeah, I'm sure the last home game, they'll put all this aside and give him a nice tribute and it'll be emotional. But I do agree with you. This is leaving a bad taste on the way out. This implosion reminds me of Arsenal last season at this point in the campaign.
I think there was still a bit of goodwill. I see that as apples to oranges, because I think if you look at Arsenal, it was like they just can't get over that hump. And we'll talk about them in a second because I think they have. But when it comes to Liverpool, this is a fading dynasty as opposed to Arsenal, which I think a lot of people would argue is about to come into being and has gotten over that hump. And look, I think it's disappointing. And it doesn't mean that Klopp isn't a legend. It doesn't mean that if anybody has cachet and if anybody has been given plenty of rope, it is Jurgen Klopp. But I also think it brings up a point, and maybe this is another backhanded type of compliment to Jurgen Klopp, is that he is going out at the time that was absolutely appropriate. And it has gotten stale, and he has done everything and historically incredible things, and he will be revered for, you know, for decades to come because of what he did. But he is getting out at a time where if he wasn't getting out, I think there would be a lot of calls that say, you know, this has run its course.
And more on that at the bottom of this segment. Manchester City, meanwhile, on Thursday, 4-0 away win over Brighton. And then on Sunday, 2-0 away to Nottingham Forest. Against Forest, it was Vardiol late in the first half, heading in a De Bruyne corner. And then Erling Haaland, who didn't start, came on in the second half and scored a lovely goal, also assisted by De Bruyne. Forest missed some great chance in this game. This was the rare Manchester City game where the scoreline flattered them a little bit. Nevertheless, they got the 3 points. Gio did not start, came on for the last 20 minutes or so.
Who's up top over there for Forest? Woods?
Yeah, that was an incredible miss.
I mean, can you imagine if Jesus Ferreira had been missing these types of shots? I mean, Jesus Ferreira, the punching bag for so many when it comes to the national team. And this guy, I mean, opportunity after opportunity. You know, that Gio didn't start. Okay, we've talked till we're blue in the face about what is or what isn't going on out there. To your point, I thought that Forrest actually had a bunch of opportunities and certainly were in this game. This was not a particularly good performance from Man City, but, you know, you're bringing Erling Haaland off the bench. And even for a big guy, again, he showed it time and time again. When he gets that ball to score his goal, even for such a big guy, the grace and combined with the power, there was only one thing that was going to happen as it went down, and he pushed it by and then finished it. Guardiola, by the way, he's a goal scoring machine of late. Pretty impressive what's going on. So now it's the run up to the end here. This shouldn't be necessarily a surprise for Man City to find a way to get 3 points against Forest, but the way in which it happened, it was not emphatic. It was not certainly their best performance by any stretch of the imagination, but their elite nature means that they can find ways to win, even if it's ugly.
And then also on Sunday, Arsenal claimed a 3-2 away win over Tottenham. They jumped out to a 3-0 lead in the first half. Tottenham scored twice in the second half to make things interesting, but the Gunners held on. There was some refereeing controversy in this one. Tottenham had a goal chalked off early because of a marginal offsides. And then the second Arsenal goal scored by Bukayo Saka came after a sequence in which Tottenham had a penalty shout. A lot of people think it should have been given for Trossard fouling Kulusevski. We also had in the second half a playing out of the back apocalypse by David Raya, who gifted Tottenham a goal. So all of your greatest hits in this match.
It was awesome. It was a fun game. While the scoreline looks close, it was not as close. And I know a lot of Spurs fans are saying, yeah, but, you know, the penalty that should have been called and that would have changed everything. I wasn't apoplectic about anything when it came to the refereeing in this game or the calls or the no calls. They were all subjective types of situations.
And we do have a VAR question in the Ask Alexi segment, so we'll revisit all this down there. But the weekend ends with Arsenal at 80, City 79, Liverpool 75. City have played one fewer game. Next weekend, City will host Wolves. Arsenal will host Bournemouth. Bournemouth have been frisky of late. We'll see about Tyler Adams in that match, but that's a Basque managerial showdown. Arteta against Iraola.
Yeah, but can I just bring it back to the Tottenham game for just a second? Because what we mentioned before about them getting over the hump, I think that this was on display here. And I think even Saka after the game had talked about how they don't, if this is last year, this result probably doesn't finish like this. So they have grown. I think that they have grown mentally in terms of their fortitude and their ability to find ways out. I wasn't as worried as maybe Piers Morgan was when this started to go south, even with the bad playing out of the back here. And I think this team will look at this and say, hey, while it wasn't perfect, it was far from perfect, this is a game that in the past we might not have won, and that will serve them well going forward. They're still, even though points-wise they're ahead, they're a game behind, Man City still has to play a game, and I still think it's Man City's to lose, but this is going to be fun down the stretch, and we went from three, as we mentioned now, down to these final two.
Absolutely. We dropped down a level to the Championship. Norwich played to a 2-2 home draw with Swansea. Josh Sargent on target. Make that 16 goals in 25 Championship matches this season. Norwich likely headed for the promotion playoffs.
Yeah, dude's on fire. Keeps scoring. It's wonderful for him. And this, the goal that he scores is not easy because this is coming to the far post. It's in the air a long time. And his ability to get up in the air, to adjust his body while he is in the air, and to hit it back across the grain and down into the ground, that showed a level of finishing that was impressive, but also a level of maturity. And it has to be said, he has grown. He has grown as a player, and that is good news for the national team. If and when they call him in, and I'm expecting him to be part of the Copa America, it would surprise me if he wasn't part of the Copa America roster.
The great Matt Doyle, who according to anonymous MLS execs is the best analyst on Apple, he posted after that goal that Sargent is number one on his U.S. center forward depth chart, and then he laid out the depth chart. He's got Sargent 1, Balogun 2, Haji Wright 3, Brandon Vasquez 4, Pepe 5, P-Fox 6, and Duncan Maguire 7.
Wow. Okay. That's an interesting list there. Yeah, I think that's his list. I think if it's Greg Berhalter, I still think the incumbent is Balogun. But, and again, form is fallacy, so we'll see if he's able to translate this. But I do think that when he comes in this summer, when Josh Sargent comes in this summer, he can rightfully come in with a little swagger and recognize that there is a competition and there is a huge, huge, a continuous opportunity for somebody to step up. And who knows, by the end of this summer, we may be looking at the redhead as the man up top. Long live the mutant gene.
I wonder how Doug McIntyre feels about Ricardo Pepi at number 5. He may never speak to Matt Doyle again.
It's very possible.
Can I just put my Brazilian hat on here for one second?
Sure, sure.
Norwich's best player is actually a Brazilian, Gabriel Sara. He scored a sensational goal this past weekend and assisted the Sargent goal. And if Norwich don't get promoted, I'm curious to see what kind of move he gets this summer. Brazilians have actually shined in the championship of late. You had Matheus Pereira at West Brom, João Pedro at Watford, and now Gabriel Sara with what he's doing at Norwich this season. So I'm keeping an eye on Norwich as well from a Brazilian perspective.
So happy days are here again when it comes to Brazil. That's what I hear you saying.
Nah,
you
know? I mean, this guy's not going to impact the national team.
Oh, okay, got it. But, you know, I mean, in general, all the, you know, lifting all boats type of thing. It's a happy. I mean, you just beat England. Everything's fine. What could possibly go wrong?
We go to the Netherlands, where on Thursday, PSV squeaked by Heerenveen 8-0. Speaking of Ricardo Pepi, he came on in the second half of this game. Malik Tillman started and scored twice. Nice moment before the match. They all held up Serginho Dest, number 8. We know Dest just suffered a torn ACL. He's going to be out for the rest of 2024.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because, you know, Serginho Dest is, as we've said and we have seen, you know, he's got his own drummer, right? And he is an interesting cat. And yet, I think that doing this, I don't think they're just doing it out of the goodness of their, I think they are doing it out of the goodness of their heart. And I think they are doing it because he truly means something to them. And I think that they appreciate him. And we only see what he does on the field, but he seems to have had an impact off the field that they would honor him in this way. And, you know, maybe they do that for any player who experienced a season ending and very serious injury in the way Dest did. But I thought it was cool. And I thought it was cool for a guy that is very eccentric and very different in what he does. And sometimes from afar, from the outside, you would think that that would rub people the wrong way. And obviously internally, that's not the case. It looks not to be the case. So that's good.
They did not clinch the title because Feyenoord won that same day, and then PSV did not play this past weekend. So the champagne is on ice. They'll probably clinch it in their next game this upcoming weekend.
Yeah, it gives them more time to plan the party appropriately.
Next up, the UEFA Champions League semifinals get underway this week. We'll take them in order. On Tuesday, Bayern Munich will host Real Madrid, the latest chapter in a storied rivalry. They've met 26 times before. Real Madrid forced to contend with a red-hot Harry Kane. He scored twice this past weekend against Frankfurt, 42 goals in 42 games this season. But we know Real Madrid have an English star of their own in Jude Bellingham.
That's true. I mean, this is the only English that we're going to see in this semifinal, right? English people.
Also, Eric Dier is on Bayern as well. Oh, so the English well represented despite not having a team in it.
Listen, all eggs in that Bayern basket when it comes to Champions League. They have to be, I think, feeling good about themselves and completely focused on this. I want to, not that Bayern Munich is ever a Cinderella type of story, but I want to go with Bayern in this, but I feel like my heart says Bayern, but my mind says Real Madrid, Mossy. Who are you going to go with?
I lean Real Madrid, but could certainly see Bayern advancing.
All right, well, if you're going Real Madrid, then I'm going with my heart, and I'm going with Bayern in a magical, strange type of situation and season where Bayern Munich gets to the final despite completely bottling it when it comes to the league.
I've never heard of picking Bayern Munich being the heart pick, but that's what you're going with here.
Oh, wow. So they don't elicit any type of romance or warmth or beauty when it comes to this team? No?
Not for
wow.
me.
Wow. How stereotypical can you get? That is just ridiculous.
And then on Wednesday, Borussia Dortmund will host PSG. PSG clinched the Ligue 1 title this past weekend. Kylian Mbappe, 43 goals in 44 matches this season. Dortmund got drilled by Leipzig. They're going to finish fifth in the Bundesliga, but that's probably okay because Germany, are going to get that extra Champions League spot. Nevertheless, a dichotomy between their domestic and European form. A team that's fifth in the Bundesliga is in the Champions League semis.
Yeah, I mean, it does show that the ability to fight on multiple fronts, even for elite teams that spend a lot more and have incredible stars, it's still difficult. And credit and kudos and added praise to those teams that are able to do that. But I think that this is the end of the road for Dortmund.
The final is at Wembley, and Bayern and Dortmund have met in a Champions League final at Wembley back in 2013. So we could have history repeating itself, but I don't think so. I think it's going to be Real Madrid PSG, which with the whole Mbappe subplot is going to be fascinating.
Au revoir, Dortmund. Auf Wiedersehen, Dortmund. I think PSG finds a way. I think that they do it. Well, I'm not going to say comfortably, but they get through.
Very quickly, the Europa League semis also get underway this week. We've got Marseille, Atalanta, Roma versus Leverkusen. Leverkusen unbeaten in 46 matches in all competition this season, and their penchant for scoring late goals to preserve that unbeaten record has been truly remarkable. They did it again this past week against Stuttgart, 90+6. The game before against Dortmund was 90+7. Plenty of examples before that. We'll see if they can keep this going.
The phenomenon of a team scoring late, Rossi, and we see it in multiple sports. You can just say that it's, you know, Fergie time or, you know, added whatever it is. There is an aura and a feel that you can't quite put your finger on. And I know oftentimes coaches and managers and teams will talk about that it is a skill. I do think that it is, but I think it's a skill that is implanted much more in the head than the actual body. Yes, you have to be fit and you have to believe in that fitness and believe that, you know, it's a marathon type of thing and that's where you're going to have your kick at the end. Yes, in certain instances, you look back at history and what you have been able to do to confirm that there is a goal out there for you. I don't know how you coach it. It happens or it doesn't happen, and then you build on it when it does happen. Again, coaching is fitness and all that kind of stuff, so you have to have that. But a lot of teams have that. But the ability to look around and to sense and to smell that there is opportunity coming because you are coming to the end of the game, that's the mental part of the game. And while it's hard sometimes to put it on a sheet of paper or on a computer or something like that, it's there and it's, you can feel it. It is to a certain extent tangible when you are at teams that know that they are going to find a way to win because of that time that they have at the end.
Finally, some coaching news. First, at club level, everybody looking forward to this crazy coaching carousel in Europe this summer, but two big dominoes have already dropped. Xavi has changed his mind. He will be staying at Barcelona for another season. While Liverpool have their Klopp replacement, it will be Arne Slot, a Dutchman who is currently in charge of Feyenoord.
Ugh, more Dutch? Is that what's happening here?
Well, they saw how great a job Erik ten Hag has done at Manchester United, so we'll follow that formula.
Well, it remains to be seen whether he is impressive, but he is. If he's in the Ten Hag mold, Jesus, what are you doing?
So in terms of big openings this summer, Tuchel has not changed his mind yet. So as of now, Bayern will be in the market for a new coach this summer. As we talked about, I think both AC Milan and Juventus will be searching for new managers. And then in England, with Liverpool sorted, Manchester United and Chelsea, with Ten Hag and Pochettino leaving, I think those two will be searching for managers.
What do you think the Xavi thing is? This is a pretty good gig, and
yeah, they just caught him in a bad moment earlier this season. He was frustrated, getting a lot of criticism, and then their form picked up, even though they did get knocked out by PSG in the Champions League in controversial circumstances. But he's seen enough to think that it's worth staying on.
I feel like it's a little weak. I want somebody leading a club, and this in this case a very big club, that is, that doesn't have, well, it's not that you can't have moments of weakness. I think we all do in life, and certainly coaches and players and all that kind of stuff, but it just seems weird. It just seems weird that one minute you'll be, no, I'm out. There's no possible way I could go, and now you're back in?
I agree. I like Xavi, but I thought he handled this very poorly the last few months.
And specifically because it's Xavi, and I know he gets, and rightfully so, a lot of praise and credit for the incredible player that he was and the potential of being an incredible manager. But this makes it makes him seem weak. And that's not something that you want from a coach. So, but whatever. I mean, he's going to continue on. I don't know if that's good or bad. There are probably some that say, yeah, we might have been able to do better, but okay, welcome back.
And then at the international level, American Jesse Marsh, heavily linked with the South Korea job. We had heard possibly Canada for Jesse Marsh, but now it sounds like it will be South Korea, which ironically enough means replacing Jurgen Klinsmann.
Yeah, so when it comes to Jesse Marsh, he has, I think over the last couple of years, I'm sure as he has been... I think living over in Italy and doing some TV and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure he has had different offers, and he's a smart guy, and he's biding his time and waiting for that right offer. When the Canada situation came about, and I talked about how I thought that that would be great for him and for Canada. Canada should be so lucky to have someone like Jesse Marsh lead them into the next couple of years, and more importantly, into the summer of 2026. That would be really, really cool to have happen. When it comes to South Korea, obviously they would have to qualify, so we'd go through a qualifying process, but this is also one of the elite teams when it comes to Asia, and a perennial type of performer when it comes to being at a World Cup. And so that would be cool. If I think South Korea is a better team, and so that obviously has to factor into it. And you could become a South Korean legend if you did some incredible things with South Korea in summer of 2026, as you could become a legend of the Great White North if you did it with Canada. I think both of these are fun. It also wouldn't surprise me if neither one of these things materialized going forward. But I would love to see Jesse Marsh in an international capacity, in a team, bringing a team as an American leading either South Korea or Canada, or who knows, somebody else into a World Cup in 2026. I think that would be really cool.
I think South Korea is a pretty good job. They always qualify for World Cups. They have one of the longest active streaks, and they've gotten to the knockout stage a couple of times. You've got some players that have worked with Heung-Min Son and Kim at the back, Kang In Lee in the midfield. Plus, not to stereotype, but they're always very fit, and they run like crazy, so they would be a good fit for Jesse Marsh's style of play. If that ends up being where he goes, and he has very small shoes to fill given they were just managed by Jurgen Klinsmann.
Oh, wow. Wow. All right. So Jurgen taking some strays here at the end of the segment. Anything else?
That's it.
All right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, oh, we got some MLS action that we got to talk about. Don't go anywhere.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Okay, welcome back. All sorts of action when it comes to MLS. Where should we start?
Begin with Austin claiming a 2-0 home win over the Galaxy, Rubio and Obrian with the goals early on. Despite their success, a lot of people have been questioning whether the Galaxy are legitimate contenders, and this result added fuel to their fire.
Yeah, so when it comes to this result, I think that this is a surprising result given, the poor season that Austin has had. And yet, when you look at Austin right now, they are... four wins out of their last five, including a win, as you mentioned here, against the Los Angeles Galaxy. So that's a nice little feather in the cap of Josh Wolf, who certainly starting out the season was under pressure. And I still think he's under a bit of pressure, but they have rebounded. They have gotten healthier. And there was a belief, you saw Josh Wolf after the game talk about staying on the path and talking about believing in what they were doing and that he believes and this team now believes. So this is a huge, huge, huge result. what's his name? Ricky Pouge also got a yellow card, so he will be out for the next game for the Los Angeles Galaxy. But I really loved the goals, both of them. But in particular, what was his name? O'Brien off the post there. Just a wonderful finish, and he made it look so much easier than it actually was. They got the two goals, and that's all they needed, and they were able to ride it out. So congratulations to Austin and to Josh Wolf for doing some good work here over the last couple of weeks.
You mentioned Josh Wolf. Nick Cushing was also on the hot seat. All of a sudden, NYCFC have won three in a row.
Yeah, right. So three in a row for NYCFC, and it just shows that there are ups and downs, and the narratives will change with the wins and the losses. But if you get on a good streak, you can make up places in the standings very, very quickly. And the perception of you as a coach and the perception of what is going on can change. We're heading into the dog days of summer, so there will be another type of change, and obviously the intra or the midseason tournament that is Nations League, League Nation,
League's Cups, Cup,
whatever the hell it is. I get them all confused. That's going to derail some things right now. But again, if you find the person that can accurately and consistently predict Major League Soccer, take that person directly to Vegas.
One manager doing a really nice job is Pablo Mastroianni. RSL won 2-1 away to Philadelphia, handing the Union their first defeat of the campaign. RSL now level on points with the Galaxy atop the West.
You know, I was going to talk about this in some future episodes, but you mentioned Mastroianni and you know, Chris Armas and Ben Olsen and Wolf and this generation of coaches that have come up. And some of them, let's be honest, have had some problems and some failures. Some of them come out of the chute and been very, very good. But what's been interesting for me to see from afar is a lot of these coaches evolve and progress. And some of them have gotten opportunities at a very, very young and inexperienced age because there was a belief in what they could be. They've gone through ups and downs. Jim Curtin, I think, has been almost completely positive throughout his career at Philadelphia. But it does show that, like any, like a human being or like a player, in time you change. And when it comes to someone like Ben Olsen, who you were as a coach 5 years ago or even 10 years ago is very, very different than what you are right now. And sometimes we pigeonhole some of these coaches and we obviously associate them and forever link them to a specific team or a way that they played, and you don't recognize that, like players, they can develop and they can improve over time, and you might get a much better version going forward. So anyway, it's a fun little side note in terms of following this league is the development of a lot of these coaches, many former players, many former MLS players, many former US players, and this whole crop of coaches that is coming about and that will lead a lot of these teams going forward.
LAFC climbing up the Western Conference standings. They claimed a thrilling 3-2 home win over Portland. A Kamal Miller own goal and Timothy Tillman late in the first half gave LAFC a 2-0 lead. Then in the second half, goals by Rodriguez and Moreno equalized for Portland. But in stoppage time, Dennis Bouanga with a sensational winner. Kyla put in the rundown, Dennis Bouanga is unstoppable, exclamation point. So she's fired up about his recent form.
I mean, he's been incredible. And the types of goals that he is scoring, even the goal that got called back, it was awesome. He went and grabbed somebody's cell phone and did a whole thing. And then VAR brought it back. But the game winner, and he was involved in everything. And it's another situation where the entire stadium and everybody on the field knows that you have this ability, and everybody's looking for you to provide magical moments, and yet you still do it. And the game winner was from pretty far out, and his ability to curl that thing into that far post, that was worth the price of admission as far as I'm concerned. So another big win. Portland continues to be in games, and from an attacking perspective, I think that they're good. They still struggle from a defensive standpoint. And I still think that Portland is a work in progress, but this was a fun game to watch.
Red Bulls in Vancouver finished 1-1. Brian White scored first. That goal made him the Whitecaps' all-time leading scorer.
Really?
Yep. And then Lewis Morgan equalized.
Yeah, we've talked about some surprises this year, and the success of Vancouver and the success of the New York Red Bulls, I think, would be up there on the lists. although I'm sure there's some people that predicted here. You know, Brian Wright, remember when Brian White was one of those people that people had in lists of potential strikers out there? So good for him in terms of continuing to score goals and finding a home, literally off the field, but also on the field with Vancouver. Another red card when it comes to the Red Bulls, so they continue to shoot themselves in the foot. But still, this is a very different Red Bulls team, and I think they're going to be there in terms of certainly a playoff team, but you know, maybe one of the elite teams when it comes to this season.
Inter Miami claimed a 4-1 away win over New England. The Revs actually scored in the opening minute with Chankalai, but then it was all Inter Miami after that. Messi scoring twice, Kramaski and Suarez with goals as well. Messi assisting the Suarez goal. He's got 9 goals and 7 assists in 7 games this season. He's threatening to make this a very anticlimactic MVP race.
Yeah, I think he would qualify in terms of my criteria. I'd have to do the calculations, but yes, Messi is on fire. And, you know, talk about somebody that produces when everybody's watching. You know, 60-something people up there in Foxborough at Gillette. And it was interesting, the whole dynamic there, because obviously a lot of people were there to see Messi. And there were a lot of pink jerseys. There were a lot of Argentina jerseys, which is to be expected. Greatest player, arguably, of all time comes to town. I know some of friends of mine were sending me texts and pictures because they had made the trek up, you know, whether it was from Rhode Island or Connecticut or wherever to watch this game. And it was an event and it was a place to be. We talked about last week about the potential for New England to introduce the brand even to a whole group of people that maybe have never been to a New England Revolution game or never been to Gillette for a New England Revolution game. And in that sense, yeah, you introduced it. You kind of wasted it. And I thought it was going great after the first minute when you score. But then it was all Inter Miami. And it's probably not fair because this New England team is not good. And you expected them to be something that they weren't. And on top of that, they had the flu run through the team. They had, you know, some injuries. It's not an excuse. Everybody has problems like that. But it's certainly, for a poor New England team, this wasn't even the fully functioning poor New England team. And Messi saw right away, licking his chops. Busquets, by the way, was just hitting some incredible balls.
The assist on Messi's second goal.
Oh, my God. Just so glorious. And I know everybody that was doing the game, I echo the touch that Messi has is part of what makes him great. Yes, his vision and his mentality and all that kind of stuff. But when the ball comes to him, you know, we talk so much about first touch and how it leads to everything after that. And if you have a good first touch, it's almost a fait accompli in that it opens up and it writes itself. And Messi's ability to maintain the ball close to him, but also set up his second touch, in this case, you know, putting it in the back of the net, it's just, it's amazing. And there is a glue, but there is just a, and I'm trying to think of the right word, but a beautiful, romantic cushion and a softness to it that, I mean, is the essence of, at times, what makes Messi great.
There's almost never an off-balance finish for him. He always gets his body right so he can finish properly.
His center of gravity, kind of, yeah.
When Cristiano Ronaldo was at his peak at Real Madrid, there was a Madrid columnist named Alfredo Relaño who said that when you have Ronaldo on your team, it's like you start every match winning 1-0. And I kind of get that sense with Messi and Inter Miami right now. If he's healthy and on the field for 90 minutes, it's hard for me to imagine that he's not going to either score a goal himself or tee somebody up with a great assist. So you almost go into every game already having a goal in the bank.
Yeah, and we've seen now, you know, whether in this case it's Caleb Porter or everybody that plays Messi, the first question you're going to get in the lead up to the game is, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to stop him? And I think most coaches now in MLS have resolved that you're not going to stop him. And you're going to do things to try to contain him, but at certain point, he's going to do magical things. And it doesn't matter how good a coach you are, doesn't matter what X's and O's you throw up there, you can't stop something like that. And so you're going to have to find a way on the other side to capitalize on some of the weaknesses that they have, whether it's their defense, even in goal. I mean, that first goal, I think it's on calendar. I think that's on the goalkeeper coming out and allowing that. So they're not a perfect team, but they are flying right now.
Yeah, some new coaches having rough starts to life. Caleb Porter, obviously, at New England. Phil Neville, who we just talked about at Portland, they're winless in seven games. Yeah, so some of these new coaches everybody was excited about. So far, no bueno.
Tough.
Finally, a coach who's been around for a while, Peter Vermes, gave us an amusing post-match moment. Minnesota claimed a 2-1 win over SKC, and Vermes had a big issue with Minnesota's second goal scored by Oluwaseyi.
I love Peter Vermes, and if you ever get a chance to sit down with Peter Vermes, do it, because you will feel energized and you will feel better about yourself, about life, about soccer, about anything. And he gives great quote. He was, like coaches are, not happy with the referees. It's interesting now how, you know, we still have all of these controversies and all of this criticism when it comes to the referees, even though they're not replacing referees anymore. So Peter Vermes was not happy with with the call on the field. And so in his post-game press conference, he brought his tablet and showed everybody why he thought, in his estimation, that this was just absolutely ridiculous, and he was beyond beside himself in being agitated that this had actually happened on the field, and it's actually turned into a meme. And immediately I started getting texts, and Stu Holden is really, really good at doing this, because, you know, he's holding up a tablet, and so now you can put anything in that. And I saw a bunch of fans doing some different stuff. So thank you, Peter Vermes, yet again. And if you remember, not too long ago, Peter Vermes gave us a wonderful meme of basically telling somebody to, you know, F you. And it's just wonderful if you look that up. So he is the gift that keeps on giving. And thank you, Peter Vermes, for yet another gift when it comes to social media out there.
And finally, the CONCACAF Champions Cup semis conclude this week on Tuesday at the Estadio Hidalgo. Pachuca will host America. Last week at the Azteca, it was 1-1 with Zendejas scoring the America goal. And then on Wednesday, Monterrey will host Columbus. Monterrey looking to overturn a 2-1 deficit. Last week, Columbus prevailed thanks to goals by Cucho Hernandez and Russell Rowe, while Meza scored for Monterrey in what was a very entertaining game.
Yeah, so, and after that game on Wednesday, I think a lot of us looked around and said, well, it's a win. It's a win at home. Great. But is it enough? And is it enough for a Columbus team going back down to Mexico? And they have had success even in the previous round. And so a lot of people pointed that said, yeah, well, you didn't count them out last time, and so you shouldn't count them out now. And nobody's counting them out. The problem is, do they go to that well and it's empty in now the most important important moment? And was the two goals and the 2-1 result enough? They're going to be up against it. And if anybody has the ability to find something and scrape something out of the bottom of that well, I do think that it's Wilfred Nancy and this Columbus team right now. They have put all of their eggs, another situation, in this basket. And I don't think that the season for Columbus really even starts until this CONCACAF Champions Cup situation is decided for them. They're on a streak right now of, I don't know how many ties in a row when it comes to MLS. They're going to be just fine, but I think they have their sights set on this, and they're going to have to be as close to perfect as you can going down there, even with a 2-1 advantage.
You know, Columbus in the second leg of the last round against Tigres had a playing out of the back nightmare with Patrick Schulte. We saw what David Raya did this past weekend in the Tottenham Arsenal game. The flip side of that, though, is that last Wednesday, Columbus had a couple of lovely play out of the back moments that went viral. People like Matt Doyle were having orgasms about it. So when it works, it's beautiful to watch.
Yeah. When it works, it's great. Nobody's denying that. It's beautiful, but there's percentages, right? And how many times is it going to work? Now, the other side of the percentage is how many times are you going to give the ball away in a bad area and then pay for it? You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's a give and take, and it will be a fundamental and kind of age-old consistent question that coaches are asked. And I guess when it comes to Wilfred Nancy, he would sit there and say, I don't want to betray what I believe is how this team should play, what I believe is the correct way to play, what I believe is the beautiful way to play, and what I believe is going to enable us to have the most success. You can't argue against that until you can.
Although the last time we talked about this, I mentioned that Manchester City are not above going long sometimes when the situation calls for it. Last Thursday against Brighton, their fourth goal came about from a beautiful Ederson long ball to Kyle Walker, who then squared it across to Julian Alvarez. So they use both strategies to good effect.
I mean, you know, over the last 20 years, let's say, who has been the most romantic coach out there? And it has to be Pep Guardiola.
Right? Yeah.
Pep Guardiola. But even he recognizes that there is a moment to be realistic and pragmatic, if you want, when it comes to the team. And it gives you a different look and makes you less predictable.
Last note, this past weekend was the final regular season round of the Liga MX Clausura, and it concluded with Pachuca in seventh place. So they have to play a play-in game on Thursday against Pumas. It's a bit of a scheduling nightmare. They have the second leg against América on Tuesday and then an important Liga MX game on Thursday. So I don't know how they're going to handle that. Monterrey could have been in the same boat, but they beat Necaxa this weekend 5-2. Brandon Vasquez among the scorers, so they qualified directly to the Liguilla. So they're in a little bit better shape than Pachuca scheduling-wise.
Well, it could be a very interesting week then for Pachuca.
That's it.
All right, let's take another quick break. When we come back, it's time for Ask Alexa.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $20 on the Steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real Steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Okay, welcome back. It's time for Ask Alexi, that part of the show where you send in your comments, questions, and concerns. Keep in mind that our handle out there on all the social media platforms is SOTU with Alexi. Use that hashtag Ask Alexi, or you can call our State of the Union podcast hotline, which is 657-549-2297. That's 657-549-2297. Mossy, what do the folks want to know this show?
First up, we have a voicemail. Let's take a listen.
Tommy from Billy Joel's hometown of Long Island. Two quick questions. Number one, let's say Copa America goes well, whatever well means. Would you rather, to get ready for the World Cup, would you rather go to Europe and play England at Wembley, play Italy at the San Siro, Spain at Bernabeu? Or would you rather face those hostile environments and great teams? Or would you rather play mid-level teams at home and build up support? New York, New England, maybe play the Scotlands, Ireland's, Greece's. Question two, what is the plan for the podcast this summer with Copa America and with the Euros? Well, you got, especially with the U.S. men's national team. I love you both. Keep up the great work. Really excited for Fox Sports this summer.
Okay, thank you, Tommy from Long Island. Big Billy Joel fan. I know we got a lot of big Billy Joel fans here in the studio, including the two guys sitting here. All right, so interesting question here. I think, especially given what has happened over the last cycle, and with the pandemic and all that kind of stuff, that for Greg Berhalter and this particular national team, getting the best possible competition should be a priority. And going wherever you need to go to get the best possible competition. This U.S. team, let's be honest, does not benefit from playing, for the most part, any other CONCACAF teams. And so I would like them, if and when they could, to find ways to play the elites of Europe and, let's be honest, the elites of CONMEBOL. And they'll get some games, including warm-up games coming up to this Copa America. And so if they have to go on the road to get those, I am happy for them to do that. I will say this. The confines of the United States, which are going to obviously play a big part in 2026, and being comfortable and having, I guess, an advantage. I'm not underestimating that, and I am putting value to that. But also, as we all know, a soccer game in the United States is unique, given our incredible diversity and all of the different ethnicities that we have. And home games are not always home games, but, you know, playing games in Atlanta, playing games in Dallas, playing games in venues that you are going to be part of come 2026, I do think that there is a value to that. But playing in those venues and in those locations and in the United States against inferior opposition, that doesn't do anything for this team. And so I don't know. What about you, Masi? What do you think?
I'm going to tweak the question a little
bit.
Okay.
All right.
What if we're talking about the same opponents? You could face elite teams away, or you could face them here in the United States. Now, generally speaking, facing them away might toughen up your team more. But one could argue that in a cycle in which the World Cup is in the United States, doesn't it make more sense to play games in the country where the tournament is actually going to take place?
It will, but there is a neutralization, if you will, when it comes to World Cups. And so those hostile types of environments that oftentimes the U.S. has faced in qualifying, obviously they're not going to go through qualifying in a lot of the Central American countries and stuff like that, where you kind of blood yourself. The World Cup, I mean, even back in 1994, when we stepped on the field against, Colombia, there were a lot of Colombians, but there were a lot of American fans. Now, when we stepped on the field against Mexico, that's a different story. And so I think it is going to be much more balanced, and you're not going to deal with some of the problems, not the problems, the challenges that you have in a really hostile, adverse type of environment that you would be faced when you go play teams elsewhere. So I get what you're saying. I just think that Greg Berhalter and company at the United States Soccer Federation just get the best competition that you can possibly get, wherever it is. Have ball, we'll travel, and we will go play them. And also, I want to see, there's going to be a lot of teams that want to come to the U.S. because they want to get the lay of the land. But this team and this group has the lay of the land when it comes to the U.S. They've played enough games here where they understand what they're up against and the advantages that they have. Right now for them, I think the best possible thing is to get the best possible competition. When it comes to what we're going to do this summer, we have all sorts of plans when it comes to the digital side, when it comes to what we're doing with the State of the Union. We will be, Mossy and I will be on after every single day, and as we've mentioned before, from sunrise to sunset and beyond when it comes to our coverage of Copa America and the Euros and the overlap that's happening right there. And so we will have wrap-ups of the day when it comes to both of those tournaments. We'll have previews of what's coming later on. Our award-nominated show when it comes to Fox Soccer Now will return with the pregame shows that we have hosted by Jimmy Conrad and a whole selection of guests that will be returning or new ones that you will see. So, listen, your feed will be chock full of information and content when it comes to what is happening with the tournaments that we are broadcasting, obviously, and in the general world of soccer. Does that sound about right? Did I get it all?
That's the plan.
Mossy's a little worried because he's so valuable to our company here and to what we do, and even more so when we have two overlapping tournaments. He's worried he's going to get pulled in a bunch of different directions. But you know what, Mossy? Suck it up, Buttercup. All right? It's coming this summer, and we need you.
Next up, we have a question on X. Not really a question, more of a statement. Amir says, VAR ruined the game. Even with no horse in the race, games are unwatchable at times. Flow of the game, as imperfect as it was, is dead.
Okay. So Amir over here on X, I appreciate the sentiment, and I respect the fact that there are lots of people like you that are sitting around scratching their heads, pulling their hair out, saying, you know, why has the game that I love become this? So first off, I think we have to recognize, and in your case, admit that you are of this generation that is straddling two eras, the pre-VAR and the post-VAR. And it is a generation right now that is full of angst and anger at what the game has become, but also recognize that you and that generation, and I'm part of that generation too, we will die out. There's a whole nother generation that has come and will come to the game, and they won't have that comp. They won't have that compare and contrast. And VAR and technology will be part of the game, and they will look at it as just another part of the game. And their romantic notions of the game are reflective of a game that has VAR. I don't think that VAR has ruined the game. I don't think that it has become unwatchable at times. We've talked about the delayed gratification when it comes to goals and the additional second bite at the apple, if you will, and the additional drama and theater, almost like a verdict in a court case or a a reality show and the suspense that is created. But yes, that original and traditional type of celebration at times is and will continue to be muted as you wait for that final confirmation. But the entire premise of VAR was, let's get the call right. Let's use the technology available to do a better job of getting the call right and having fewer mistakes. And I believe that VAR has done that, even though it has changed the viewing experience for a generation. And that's okay. I think that's okay. Amir, you're just going to have to deal with it because that train has left the station. It's not going back, although I did see a league over there that I think you wanted to mention.
Yes, Sweden. Yeah. They have said no thanks. The Swedish FA has declined to introduce VAR, and the fans are evidently very happy about
this. That's great. That's great. So here's what's going to happen, all right? Every single game is televised. Oh, and by the way, everybody's got their own camera at a game. And all of this video is going to come out. And what's it going to prove? It's going to prove that you missed the call. It's going to prove that you made a mistake. And who knows? Maybe that mistake results in multi-million dollars in terms of going up, going down, winning, losing, or just from a romantic perspective, it results in you being crushed, that you lost, that you were denied the opportunity for your team to score a goal and possibly win a game because you didn't want to use technology to actually get the damn call right. So I am evolved, Mossy. All right? I am able to look at the new version of the game with technology and with VAR and put aside the past and look at it as the new romantic version of the game.
If I'm not mistaken, during COVID, Sweden was the one country that didn't have any of the same restrictions as everybody else. So they like to kind of go their own way on things. I think they did the herd immunity thing.
Listen, who knows? Maybe that's the way to go when everybody will be happy and the Swedes are up there and saying, ah, it's okay that we lost. It's okay that we didn't score. It's okay that we didn't win. I know that every television station is showing that it was the absolute wrong call. And these referees out there, they're complete morons for missing this call. Because that's what's because when you take VAR away, it doesn't take technology away. So those of us on the television, we're going to say, look, you guys are morons. You missed this. This is an absolute disgrace that you missed this.
That's it for right. Ask Alexia. We go straight into One for the Road.
All right, One for the Road. Those two good-looking dude actors over there, the Ryan Gosling and the Ryan Reynolds and the other guy, Rob McElhaney. McElhaney, right? Two obvious talents. Really smart, interesting, funny, like I said, talented and entertaining young men. And we have seen also some pretty good businessmen when it comes to what they have done with Wrexham and the juggernaut that is and the global marketing of that show. Well, we come to find out this morning that evidently they are expanding their empire when it comes to investment in teams. And they are buying a stake in Mexico's Club Necaxa down there. And Eva Longoria is a owner, and evidently she brought them into the fold. It remains to be seen how this is going to happen and what's going to happen, but I think along the lines of a Welcome to Wrexham type of television show, who knows? Maybe there's one for Necaxa, Spanish language, you know, it moves on. And so that's great for them. As I have said time and time again, I believe in competition. I believe in capitalism. I believe in a situation like this where two smart young men are investing wisely. And I would never presume to tell them what to do with their money or how to invest, especially when it seems like it's going great. But this gets back to a thing that we talked about a few weeks ago where someone posited that that they are doing wonderful things for American soccer. All right. Not only are they not doing wonderful things for American soccer, but this goes absolutely against American soccer. This is putting your money and your time and your focus on everything but American soccer. And it's okay. Again, I'm not angry at them. I'm just pointing this out. But it also should bring up the question, and this is a fair question, as to why are they doing that? Why do they see that it's more attractive from a business perspective to put money into English soccer and now into Mexican soccer as opposed to all of the available American soccer? And there could be a bunch of different reasons and a bunch of different fair and legitimate reasons out there. But this investment and this focus, it might help them from a business perspective, and they might be very, very successful, but it does nothing for American soccer. And this isn't me forcing them to be involved in American soccer. As a matter of fact, it's the opposite. I'm saying American soccer, you have to make it attractive. You have to show, whether it's these two investors or any other investors out there, why you are where your money should be put, why you should be invested in. And certainly in this case, that has not happened for any number of reasons. There are others that see gold in them, their American hills, when it comes to American soccer and what they are doing. But as to the progress and the evolution and the betterment of American soccer, they're not doing anything for that.
So the next TV show will be Bienvenido a Necaxa.
There you go. Exactly. And look, it'll probably be, if Wrexham is any indication, another incredibly successful and possibly lucrative type of venture when it comes to what they are doing. So I do wish them success. And I do want, whether it's them or anybody else, to kick the tires. And if they feel it's appropriate, fine. If they don't feel it's appropriate, in terms of American investment, that's great. And American soccer, you should certainly look inward and say, well, why isn't it great? And what are you not doing? And who knows? This might be an aberration, just something different where they just didn't feel that it was appropriate. Because like I said, there's a lot of other people that have put a whole lot more time, effort, and let's be honest, a whole lot more money into helping American soccer than Rob and Ryan. Anything else, my friend?
That is it.
All right. We come to the end of our show. Thank you for rating and subscribing and downloading and doing all the different things that you do. I thought the show went off okay, right?
Fantastic.
Right? I mean, it was calm. All right. It was smart. It was, I think, done with the maturity and the intelligence that I don't know we've seen in a long time. So I don't know. What was it? What do you think happened?
There's a new sheriff in town.
There you go. There you go. All right, listen, we'll be back later on this week and with some more of the State of the Union. Hope you're having a wonderful week. Like we said, there's all sorts of games during the week and then coming up on the weekend. So have fun watching those. And until then, and as always, my friends, size the day.